Well, thank you for coming out on such a cold night. It's so cold that I noticed the friars have even gone into habits tonight. Now, the title of the talk is Paul the Apostle and His Ministry to the Gentiles. And that's going to involve us in a really decent subject called geography. And so I've got some maps for you, and I'll issue those at appropriate moments, you know, for each of his voyages, and then I'll give you one at the end overall. These, the ones of the individual voyages, I think I'd like to get the tape back. My printer has given up the ghost. Right. Saul of Tarsus, known as St. Paul, is a figure from ancient history who, after nearly 2,000 years, still continues to provoke controversy. And that was the author Peter Walker. From before the road to Damascus, Paul was causing problems. He still is. Some want to see him as a hero, and others as a villain. Some call him the second founder of Christianity. And others claim he so distorted a message of love into one of complex theology, and even worse, he transformed a kingdom that was open to everyone into an exclusive organization known as church. The fact is that more than anyone, Paul must be credited with successfully exporting the Christian message about Jesus to the world. A world way beyond the Palestine of Jesus. So in this talk, what I'm hoping to do is follow Paul on his voyages, drawing on his letters, and on the work of his sometime companion, St. Luke, and especially on Luke's work, the Acts of the Apostles. Paul was very different to the other apostles. For a start, he was not with the Lord in his ministry. And as we see when the apostles come to select a successor for Judas, one of the conditions was that it had to be somebody who had been with the Lord all through his ministry. Paul doesn't fit that bill. Paul was a Roman citizen. Paul was a Pharisee. His Jewish parents had settled in Asia Minor, in Tarsus. And they wanted him to be educated as a rabbi, so they sent him up to Jerusalem. And they wanted him to be orthodox. In other words, to be taught by the best, and to be, you might say, of the righteous wing of the Pharisees. As such, Paul was extremely well versed in the Old Testament, a fact that later made him such an adversary for his Jewish opponents. To his learning, you have to add or tag on a real sharpness of mind and an ability to fight his corner. I call it simply gutsy determination and a dogged persistence. They're qualities that people either appreciate or resent. Paul, as a young man, was all eagerness and righteousness, and at the age of 22, set out for Damascus in the name of Caiaphas, the same high priest who had condemned Jesus. And Paul was intent on stamping out this new sect of Jesus that was growing among the Jews, especially in Damascus. This is within 3 years of the death and resurrection of the Lord. The message was spreading. Spreading alarmingly so for the authorities in Jerusalem. And so this Jerusalem-trained rabbi sets out and is totally transformed by the event that implants itself on him for the rest of his life. Acts 9 begins the story of Paul and the church. And it starts by saying simply, as he neared Damascus, suddenly a light from heaven flashed round him, and he heard a voice say to him. And this saying is echoed and echoed. Paul keeps returning to it. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Asked Saul. I am Jesus, who you are persecuting, he replied. Ordered into the city, Ananias then comes with his commission. And again, Paul returns to this. This man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and before the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. And Paul is called upon to suffer a lot in his lifetime. But for Paul, the incident on the road to Damascus was a defining moment. Three times you find the story in the Acts of the Apostles. Twice it's recounted by Paul himself. And he's trying to identify Jesus as the source of his mission. He's underlining the fact that his call to preach comes from God, not man. Having said that, Paul did humbly seek endorsement from the apostles, especially Peter and James. He did not go out on an independent limb. The apostles, Paul sees as being commissioned by the risen Christ just before the ascension. Paul was commissioned by the risen Christ at Damascus. When you look at Paul's story, you see you are looking at the story of the risen Christ at work. Writing to Timothy in old age, Paul was to say, I acted in ignorance. This is of his Jewish years, and he sets out for Damascus. But the grace of our Lord was poured on me abundantly. Jesus came to save sinners, of whom I was the worst. Paul had been called to bring the good news to the Gentiles. Remember, the Jews looked on Gentiles as unclean. They referred to them as dogs. So this is a huge change and a huge charge for this young rabbi. The whole story is paradoxical. Why was such a Hebrew of Hebrews chosen? I suppose you might say that this young rabbi had the theological agility of mind and the necessary authority to show that he was appointed by God for the Gentiles and was part of the plan of salvation. And from Damascus onwards, Paul became a tireless advocate for Gentiles. And he even had to battle for the Gentiles with the other apostles. There were some stormy rounds which the Acts of the Apostles hints at, alludes to, states bits of. I think it goes a lot deeper. Certainly with somebody like Paul. Paul had very strong opinions. In Romans 15:7, he urges Gentiles and Jews to welcome one another, just as Christ has welcomed you. Then he says, grace was given to me by God to be a minister of Christ, a minister to the Gentiles, with the priestly duty of proclaiming the gospel of God. Christ, through Paul, has extended the mercy of God. In Philippians and in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 15, he refers to himself as seized by Christ to be his ambassador. In 2 Corinthians, he often refers to himself as the representative of Christ. And his letter to the Romans reminds us of his roots. I'm an ambassador, yes, to the Jews first, and then also to the Greeks. The Greeks representing there, of course, the rest of the world. It's based on his training, his Jewish traditions. You might say that they're still there with him. Paul holds the view that even his ministry among the Gentiles was with a view to the ultimate salvation of his own people. But in Acts 13, Paul faces up to a hard fact. So many of his own people are rejecting the message of Jesus. And so he says, it has to be taken to the Gentiles. I said Paul was gutsy. Very soon he was preaching even in Damascus after his conversion. And he who had been a hero of Orthodox Jewry had turned. He's now teaching Jesus is the Messiah of Israel. And that unshakable conviction was given him in the Damascus Road incident. It was to drive him for the rest of his life. To follow Jesus was his supreme goal. Paul apparently must have been a very effective preacher, because he provoked a violent reaction among the synagogue worshippers. And he always starts in the synagogues. Wherever he goes, first place he goes to is the synagogue. Well, the reaction in Damascus was vicious, and that was to set the pattern. But there was a group of non-Jews who also were, you might say, hangers-on around the synagogues. And they were called God-fearers. The God-fearers were actually Greek-speaking people who accepted the monotheism, just one God, accepted especially the moral code that went with the law, but circumcision, no, and what that implied. And so they stayed as non-Jews, but God-fearers. And of course, were great supporters of the synagogues. That would be, you know, verbally and financially. They found Paul's message very welcome. And he was to make great inroads in his lifetime among the so-called God-fearers. Paul, though, had to make his first escape from Damascus. And he set out into Arabia. And even when he goes out into what is called, what he called Arabia, he followed the same pattern. He went to the synagogues, he preached on the Sabbath, and the same reaction again. He gets chased out of Arabia. So what does he do? He doubles back. You've got to always outwit your enemy. And he doubles back to Damascus. This time, they chase him. They want to kill him. And so they lower him in a basket down the walls of the city. As I say, it keeps happening to Paul. He then, 3 years after his conversion, went up to Jerusalem for the first time. And you can imagine how they felt. He gets a cool reception. The year's 36-37 AD. It was understandable. He had put them through the hoops, you might say, in Jerusalem. But he wins them over. And from Peter especially, he learns a lot about the life of Jesus. And I think it's from Peter that he learns the account of the Last Supper that you find in 1 Corinthians. In Jerusalem too, Paul went into the synagogues. I remember he had been one of the rabbis. But now he goes to the Greek-speaking synagogues and he preaches boldly Jesus the Messiah, just as Stephen had done. And once more, the reaction was a death hunt. So Paul was gathered up by the Christian community and told, go to Tarsus. And they sent him to Tarsus for his own safety, but also to get rid of this troublemaking, fiery preacher. Paul, in Tarsus, which is his home area, and he loved Galatia, considers his position. And he thinks, in the Old Testament, Moses encountered God, who gave his name as I Am. And he says, I encountered God, Jesus. Moses was given a new commission to rescue God's persecuted people and bring them to freedom. Paul's task is to carry Jesus' name before the Gentiles so that they too can experience freedom. Moses had to wait many, many years after his commissioning. Paul too waited. He was converted probably in the year 32-33 AD. It's 14 years before he actually begins to set out on his missionary voyages. That's not till about 46 AD. In the Acts of the Apostles, you find they glide over that 14 years in just 16 lines. But Paul is not the type of person to sit back and do nothing. He's very active. These years were to be time of reflection, time of activity, time of prayer. When he went home to Galatia and when he went home to Tarsus, I think it's pretty certain that his family would not receive him, his parents, brothers and sisters. And so Paul, who had no trade, said, right. And that's where he took up his tent making trade. And from there on, wherever he was, he said, I will support myself. He would not rely on others. In fact, when he writes in 2 Thessalonians, he says, when we were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not work, he shall not eat. That used to be pinned up by the master students on feast days in the college. He'd say, you can have a free day today, and then on the notice board, we'll just clear up this notice. He who does not work should not eat. Paul's primary goal in these 14 hidden years, they're called the Levantine years, was to pray more deeply and develop his spiritual resources. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, at 12:2, he speaks of a mystical experience he experienced in praying when he was there in Tarsus. He pondered, he framed his belief. He had met the risen Lord. He knows he is alive and active. Now he considers God wants all people brought into his kingdom. The gateway to the kingdom is no longer the law of Moses, but faith in the crucified Christ. And thus armed, he emerges in resolute form. He organized primitive Christian churches around responsible elders. And apparently he must have been going around Galatia, and word got back to Antioch about him. And they sent Barnabas to say, come and help us in Antioch. The church in Antioch was expanding rapidly, especially among the Greek speakers, the God-fearers, as I call them. It became Paul's home. He settled there for a while. It became his home, and he always regarded it as his sending church. He begins each of his missions from Antioch. Here he learned to blend Greek and Jewish communities, and all the time he was learning more and more about what it is to be a follower of Christ. He was becoming convinced that his own Jewish roots were hardening their opposition to Jesus as the Messiah, and it was time, as he says, for the coming in of the Gentiles. What sparked it? There was a famine in Judea and Jerusalem, and so a collection was taken up among the Antioch community, and so another very important church feature was born, the collection. Paul and Barnabas were sent to Jerusalem with this money. Paul describes the visit in Galatians 2:10. Peter, James and John welcomed them and supported their work in Antioch. And they recognized that Paul had a mission to the Gentiles. And all they asked him to do was to continue to remember the poor. Something that Paul and Barnabas were very keen to do. And so Paul returns from his second visit to Jerusalem, convinced that he now has the full endorsement to press ahead with his mission to the Gentile lands. Eager to get started, he brings with him a young man from Jerusalem known as John Mark. We simply call him Mark. He knew a great deal about the traditions of Jesus, and so Paul considers he'd be a great help. It's worth pointing out at this juncture that Paul leaves to others writing about Jesus, the Gospels, talking about Jesus' life. He leaves that to others. And he had with him, for many of his travels, Mark and Luke, and on one of his journeys, St. John. While the community was at prayer in Antioch, the Holy Spirit said, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work I have called them to." And then after fasting and praying, they laid hands on them and sent them off. The year was about 46 AD. And Paul set out on his first voyage. Now, I haven't got enough maps for each of you, but if you get one between two, and you can see you can see that the first destination was Cyprus. Why Cyprus? We know already in the time of Jesus that there was quite a Jewish population on the island of Cyprus. The journey is only 90 miles from Antioch to Salamis. And we think 90 miles, nothing. In Paul's day, you could only sail that distance away from land in the months of April to about October. After that, it was too dangerous. And poor old Paul is going to be shipwrecked 3 times on his voyages. And so they sail, as I say, Antioch to Salamis. That was the longest sea journey Paul had ever undertaken. Before that, he'd always sailed just around the coast, never out of sight of land. So, quite an adventure. When they arrive in Salamis, the first thing they do, go to the synagogue on the Sabbath and begin to preach. And we're not told much else there. And then he walked across the island, round by the coast road, And you can see that, you know, Kitian and so, it's about 100-odd miles. He's heading for Paphos. Paphos in those days was a big center. And then, like many of the centers we'll hear about, kind of decayed to nothing. And it was only revived by the modern-day tourist industry. Now, Paul teaches in each of the synagogues, so you can see the names there as you go around, that Jesus is the Messiah, that the promises that God had made in the Old Testament had been fulfilled. Paul met opposition more or less everywhere he went. But he did win over the Roman proconsul on the island. Paul in one of the synagogues in Paphos was opposed by a magician who was, you know, being very obnoxious. And Paul put a curse on him. And Sergius, who was the proconsul, was very taken with this. And he said, you know, he invited him to come and tell him more. And, you know, did he become a convert? We're not told. But Sergius was a proconsul, a governor. And he's invited Paul to his house to preach about Jesus. That's only 15 years after Pilate had condemned Jesus, another governor. Paul then decides bigger stage. And so he sails from Paphos to his home territory towards Pamphylia, and what we'll call Galatia. He wanted to push on into his home territory. He was all eagerness. This was the missionary work he'd been longing for. And perhaps too, he sought evidence of God's power to reach all nations. He wanted something to really show that God was endorsing his mission. Endorsement that he could show to the authorities in Jerusalem. For Mark, who had accompanied him, and Barnabas, Mark, it was a bit too far, a bit too much. He was young, he was homesick, he went home. Paul was very hurt. But when Mark gets back to Jerusalem, he must have told the church there about Paul's work among the Gentiles. And this is where lifelong trouble begins. The community in Jerusalem had a lot of convert Jewish priests. And they clung adamantly to the idea that salvation still comes through the law and circumcision, and that Gentiles must first become Jews and accept the law before they can be acceptable to God. They hear from Mark that Paul is accepting Gentiles without circumcision, which was the gateway, you might say, to the old law. They were apoplectic. They sent people to combat and challenge Paul. And wherever Paul goes after this, they send people to combat and challenge and pursue. And in some cases, they try to pursue him to death. They do try to kill him. And they're doing this out of their own righteousness. They are, you might say, so confirmed in their belief that you've got to become a Jew before you can follow Jesus. Their arrival in Galatia, where Paul had been going from community to community, provoked such a storm that Paul and Barnabas decide, we've got to go back to Jerusalem. And they went back to Jerusalem for the so-called Council of Jerusalem that tackled the question. Paul went to Jerusalem feeling his life work was in the balance. The letter to the Romans is largely a response to the Jerusalem-based counter-missionaries who opposed Paul all the way. While Paul was away in Jerusalem, some of these counter-missionaries, and they are, remember, Christians, went among the Galatian converts trying to say, it's not enough to be baptized, you've got to be circumcised and become Jews. That followed him, as I say, throughout. Corinth, Rome, Philippi, always the same. Paul argues that the old covenant has run its course. We are justified by Christ and not by works of the law. In Jerusalem, Peter was happy to mix and eat with Gentiles. The counter-missionaries then came. Peter no longer mixes or eats with the Gentiles. And Barnabas too stops. Barnabas, who'd been with Paul right through Asia Minor on the first trip. Paul gives his response in Galatians. He said, the badge of membership of God's people is faith in Jesus Christ, not circumcision or the food laws. Anyone who had faith would be welcome to sit at the table of the Lord. Paul feared that all he had done was being undermined, and Jesus' death on the cross was being discarded. And he calls, for why had Jesus died? Precisely to bring about salvation for those with repentant faith. In the council, James ruled in Paul's favour. And he adds only that Gentiles must refrain from eating food that's been offered to idols and from sexual immorality. Paul leaves Jerusalem absolutely triumphant and sets out once again. And this time he takes with him not Barnabas and Mark. Mark is not forgiven for a long time. He takes Silas and John, the fourth evangelist. So his second voyage. You see, that first one is quite limited in extent. The second voyage is going to be much, much more adventurous. To put it into context for you, Jesus reigned about 150 miles in his lifetime. Paul will reign about 1,400 miles away from his place. And Paul, remember how he's travelling. We've already seen it. It's very dodgy sailing. And some of his voyages, you know, you'd say whoever was steering was pretty awful. Sea voyages were difficult. Most of his voyaging was on foot. Occasionally on a donkey. That's about it. And so they actually walk, what? 20, 30 miles a day. But they're not proper roads. Except in a few places. The Romans had built a very good road down through Greece that led across to Italy, to Brindisi, and then to Rome. But for the most of the time, you know, it was rough. And you didn't have a full police force. You did have Pax Romana. That's the Romans were patrolled areas, and so it was safer than it used to be. For his second voyage, notice though, where does he go first? He goes back to Galatia, his home territory. He went into the first two towns, Lystra and Iconium. He went to the synagogues there, followed his usual pattern, preaching, healing. And he healed somebody in Iconium. And the people were just so taken with this. They thought, he's a god, he's a god, and Barnabas is a god. And they want to take them out and worship them. And you know, Paul stops them. Just. But no sooner had that, there was a disappointment, you might say, for the local people. They're not gods. It's just then that the counter-missionaries arrived who were following them from Jerusalem. And they stirred up feeling against Paul. And Paul, who'd, as I say, healed people in Iconium, was taken outside the city and stoned to death, as they thought. And they just left him dead. But Paul gets up and staggers back into the city. And the believers said, what the dickens are you doing back here? And they literally, you know, drag him out and take him away from the city. And he went on from there towards the coast. Paul's letter, writing back to these communities, is the letter to the Galatians. And it reflects the fondness he had for them. He writes, you are all sons and daughters of God through faith. There's neither Jew nor Greek. And then he says, later on he just says, my dear children, how I wish I was with you. But Paul had decided the big picture. He felt the call to Europe. And he made the long and often mountainous journey to Troas, or Troy, to cross the Aegean. He'd had what you might say was a vision. And in the vision he'd seen a man in Macedonia standing and begging him to come and help. Come to the people of Macedonia. Help us. And so Paul sets off and he crosses into Europe. It was a huge cultural change for him. Paul's travelling companions had to be ready for anything when they were with him. He changed his strategy once he crossed into Europe. From now on, instead of little town and village synagogues, he aims only for the large towns and cities. And so if you look at the map, you'll see he goes to Philippi. And then he heads very quickly to Thessalonica. He will then go on down to Athens, finally to Corinth. And he hurries between them all, except for a short stay in Berea. In Philippi, his first major stop in Europe, there was a major departure too, in Paul's approach. He went first to a woman's group. And their spokesperson was Lydia. And she responded to his preaching by immediately asking for baptism. There was a fortune teller who earned huge sums of money for her owner, but she was a slave. But Paul exorcised this poor woman who wanted to become a Christian. He exorcised her. She was happy. Her owner was not. The source of income was gone. He had Paul and Barnabas dragged before the Roman magistrate, who quite happily had them flogged and imprisoned. Then that night an earthquake struck the town, And the jailer ran to the prison thinking that all the prisoners had escaped. Finding the door open, he was about to fall on his own sword, and Paul called to him from within. Paul and all the other prisoners were at prayer. The jailer and his family were baptized that night. It's a well-known story, but I tell it because that and the case of Lydia show that a response of faith led to baptism. A sign for Paul of truly becoming part of God's people. Not only was circumcision out, but women could be admitted on equal footing with men and could worship with the men. In the synagogue, of course, they were separated. But in Paul's communities, men and women worshipped together. Huge change. Paul went on to Thessalonica. He followed his pattern. He got a very good reception at first in the synagogue and especially among the God-fearers. But when the Jews saw that the God-fearers were becoming Christian, they weren't very happy. They were jealous. The God-fearers had been stolen from us. And so all they simply did was go out into the market, rent a crowd, and force the authorities to arrest Paul and Barnabas. And once again, Paul and Barnabas had to flee by night. And they didn't even get time to say farewell. And you can see that urgency and the lack of farewells in Paul's first letter to the Thessalonians. But they went from there to Berea, which is not that far away from Thessalonica. And everything went well there. But again, the counter-missionaries appear. And so the young men in Berea who'd become Christians escorted Paul out and all the way to Athens. But he went on his own. They didn't take Barnabas, because the counter-missionaries weren't pursuing Barnabas, and they weren't pursuing John. They were pursuing Paul, who'd been more, you know, such a figure. And it was Paul was the, you might say, thorn in their side. It was about 50 AD. Paul preached in the marketplace in Athens. And Stoics and Epicureans came and listened to him and they said, "Oh, you're a babbler." But he was invited by others to speak to the whole council in the debating area, the Areopagus. And in the only speech that Paul gave to pagans that we have, he said, and I summarize, "The Creator God who made the world doesn't live in temples made by man, but he gives everyone life and breath. And in him we live and move and have our being. He is that near to us. And he commands all people to repent before the day when he will judge the world with justice. And he gave proof of this to everyone by raising Jesus from the dead." Note, it is still very Jewish in thinking, but there are new elements there too. Note how he focused on the resurrection. He didn't focus on the cross. Some of the Greeks sneered. Some showed interest. Paul, though, again, looks at the situation and judges a door has closed. He won't go back to Athens. Instead, he went on to Corinth. And there he met up again with Silas and Timothy. He was at a very low ebb when he arrived. He'd been hounded out of three cities. He starts again, preaches in the synagogue, and once again the counter-missionaries come and try to chase him out. And Paul digs his heels in this time. He won't be handed out. He may have been kicked out of the synagogue, but he just does a simple thing. He went next door. He went to the home of a believer called Justus. And he stayed there in Corinth for 18 months. Corinth was famous for its temple of Aphrodite. And Aphrodite had a cult of prostitution. Very lucrative. Paul's preaching was seen as a threat to trade and prosperity. Paul was being sheltered in Corinth by Aquila and his wife Priscilla, who had just arrived from Rome. And they gave him lodgings. They too were believers, and very important to Paul, they were tent makers. With Tim and Barnabas, the five of them made hundreds of converts. Jealous Jews charged him before the Roman proconsul, persuading people to worship God in ways contrary to Roman law. But of course, it's what the Jews were doing all the time anyway. Gallio, the proconsul, says, "Get out of my sight, go away." He dismissed them. But Paul thinks, well, after 18 months, time to go. And he set off, and he crossed the Aegean again. He went to Ephesus. Ephesus was one of the major ports of the world at the time. But he doesn't stay. He decided that he was going to end his second mission. And so he went. And he sent word round all the churches to take up another collection. It'll take some money. I've jumped a bit there. So, Paul writes to the communities. He writes back to Corinth. He writes to Thessalonica. He sees himself not so much as just the midwife of a community, you know, setting them up, bringing them to birth. He sees himself as the mother and the father of a community. And he frets about them. In Ephesus, he came across 12 people who had heard about baptism, but it was the baptism of John the Baptist. And so he baptizes them. And they receive the gift of the Spirit. And then he goes on. He doesn't stay. Back to Antioch. And at the end of that second voyage, he was emotionally drained. And, you know, needed, in a sense, you might say, to touch base. Somehow or other, he drew energy again and set out on his third voyage. And if I give you this is the final map. And this is his longest voyage. Yes, I'll collect them all up later. So. This time he's going to go back through his beloved Galatia. And he's going to head right down the west coast of Greece in the end. But he got as far as he went through. He's checking up on Galatia all the time. As I say, home territory, great reception. He liked the people. This time he headed to Ephesus. And he spent 3 years in Ephesus. That's the longest he spent anywhere. It's 3 whole years in Ephesus. And if you go there, in the ruins of Ephesus, you can see, in fact, the theatre. There's 2 theatres. But Paul, apparently, especially in his final year there, could talk to large crowds in the smaller of the two, the lower down circus and amphitheatre, and talk to people, you know, huge numbers, listening to him. And I went there, and I was with, and we were told scatter among, you know, the So we went up to the back rows of the amphitheatre, and a German group came in, and they left one figure down on the front, and the rest of them, like us, scattered. And we were going to just listen to our courier, who was going to say, I'll whisper and see if you can hear me. But the German took over, as they do. And he started singing, beautiful baritone voice, and what we presumed was a hymn. You know, just you could hear every single word. Absolutely word perfect. 3 years Paul spent there in Ephesus, and it was the third biggest port in the Roman Empire at the time. Luke, sadly, was not with him in Ephesus, and so we know very little of what Paul was preaching, or, you know, and what he did in Ephesus. But one thing you will know is that he made sure the converts received as much as possible regarding Jesus' own life and teaching. And Paul's letters always presuppose that. That's why you don't find in Paul's letters stories and parables from the life of Jesus. He presupposes it. You have been taught that. And he's sending letters of encouragement. So many of the letters are against the counter-missionary groups. It was the counter-missionaries that finally made him move on from Ephesus. And so he moved towards Philippi. And then he went to Thessalonica. Then he went to the west coast. But notice what he's doing. He's going down the west coast. There's only one place mentioned. Where's he heading? Back to Corinth. Another favoured watering hole. In 54 AD, in Corinth, he decided to call a halt to his Aegean mission. That was his third mission. And so this is where he decides a collection for Rome. For Jerusalem. And he sent to all the churches he'd been to in Greece and Macedonia, as it was. Because that Macedonia, by the way, remember, takes in nowadays Albania. There's quite a chunk there. And then he gets word. He's going to sail from Corinth back to Ephesus and then to Tyre and home to Jerusalem, or to Jerusalem. And he's warned, don't even think of it. The counter-missionaries are going to attack and rob you and probably kill you. And so he had the money brought to Corinth. And instead of going by sea, he sets out and does almost a marathon walk, really, right from Corinth, right up back to Thessalonica, and then to Philippi, and retraces his steps almost completely to cross back across the Aegean towards Alexandria, or, you know, Troy as we call it, and then down, and then he takes the ship again. And he goes on coastal vessels going round the coast. And notice the extraordinary one this time is he'd spent 3 years in Ephesus and loved it. But he hops past it. He doesn't go to Ephesus on the way home. He arrived in that voyage, by the way, from Lycia to Tyre was fraught with danger, because again they were pushing it on the time of year. Anyway, he arrived in Jerusalem and he brought this big collection. You've got to say, why on earth was Paul intent on bringing collections? Was it really to curry favour among the apostles for his churches? Or was it to say thanks for sending us and allowing us to go and spread the word through all these territories. And it's more likely it's something like that. That it is, it's a way of cementing the links. It's not to curry favour, but it's a way probably of saying thanks. And Jerusalem, the Judea and Jerusalem had had a hard time, a long famine for 5 years. But he's not well received, as I say, this time. And the old Judeo-Christians were stirring. And they followed Paul. Paul tried to be diplomatic. And so he went to the temple. And he was going to... Some of the money was being used to finance some people who'd taken a vow. And Paul himself went to the temple to worship. And he was seized by the authorities because people from Greece and from Asia Minor spotted him. He's arrested, they try to kill him. And it was the Roman soldiers from the heights looking down on the temple, spotted it, and they were down the hill, and they rescued Paul. But the Jews were calling out, "Rid the earth of him." And that's when Paul claims, "But I'm a Roman citizen." So the Romans had to let the Jews charge him. And most of those who pressed charges against Paul were Sadducees. Paul split them from the Pharisees by simply saying, "But I'm a Pharisee." And the Pharisees and Sadducees started fighting among themselves. There's an echo of a gospel story. But 40 Sadducees, apparently, had taken a pledge they would not eat until they kill Paul. And so the Roman commander of Jerusalem sent him with a huge military escort. If the figures are right, it's 250 foot soldiers and the same number of horsemen. Take Paul to Caesarea, which is the coastal port. And they take them to the proconsul, Felix. Felix as the governor. And it was there that Paul was held in open prison. And so people could come and see him. And one of those that did go to see him during the 2 years he was there was Luke. And they think that's where Luke wrote his gospel, where he and Paul also wrote much of Acts. Then the governor Felix is dramatically changed, and a man called Festus is put in. And Festus tries to curry favour with the Jewish authorities. And they say, "Well, if you want to be our friend, show it. Send Paul to us in Jerusalem for trial." Of course, he would never get there. And Paul says, "I claim the right to be tried by Caesar as a Roman citizen." And so Festus has to say, "You have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you will go." Paul had longed to visit Rome, and he probably thought, "Well, the only way I'm going to see Rome is to go as a prisoner." And that's what he gets. Under the guard of a centurion, he sets sail too late in the year. The idea was that they were going to sail to Ephesus. Well, if you've got one of the maps there, you can see where Ephesus is. They set sail for Ephesus, they land on the south coast of Crete. They've kind of been blown a bit off course, considerably off course. They're urged to stay in Crete, but there's a lull in the winds and they think, we push on. And they push on. And this is where your final map comes in. Because they get, instead of... They think they're going to go right up the Italian coast. In fact, they're shipwrecked on Malta. So, this is the map that you can actually keep. I would like the other one for that. It's just to show if you, the one each for this. You'll see that the print is a lot smaller. It's a test of eyesight. But you can see there that I love the way it's mapped. Just a squiggle, because how on earth they get there? They're going. Remember, they've set out from Caesarea to go to Ephesus. They've ended up on the south coast of Crete. They set out from Crete then to go across to Italy, and they're intending to go up, by the way, the east coast of Italy. But they don't. They get as far as Malta. And they're shipwrecked. But Paul, they were throwing cargo, etc., overboard, and it's night, and they can't. And Paul says, don't worry. I have been assured that I will see Rome. They're going to survive. And Paul, as I say, had already been shipwrecked twice before. He'd spent 24 hours floating in water, in the sea at one stage, and he'd survived. They get onto a shore, and they're gathering wood, and they're welcomed by Maltese. And they're gathering wood to dry themselves out, or to cook food, or whatever it is. And Paul picks up a snake in amongst his wood, and is bitten. And the people think, he must be a murderer. He must be really evil. He's been saved from the sea only to die a snake bite. Does nothing to him. And Paul spends there. They have to winter there. They couldn't sail on. It was too late in the year. So they winter in Malta, and are treated with great kindness by the Maltese. And if you go to Malta now, today, you'll find that the names, there's quite a few names linked to Paul's stay over in Malta. And they show you the cave where Paul preached. In 60 AD, they did eventually make it to Rome. Paul had one guard, and he lived in lodgings provided by the community of believers in Rome. Remember, this is only 30 years after the death of the Lord. Even the Jewish authorities in Rome welcomed him, and they came to hear his preaching. They were at least that open-minded. Sadly for him, his travelling companion, Luke, died not long after he arrived in Rome. Paul found this very hard, and so he sent for Timothy. And Timothy came at his request. And together Paul and Timothy wrote then to the Colossians. It was one of the places Paul never visited. And in fact, if you go looking for Colossae now, you'll only find a mound. It was destroyed in an earthquake. But Paul didn't visit it. But believers from other communities had gone there. And so Paul wrote to them. He wrote to Philemon there as well. But the one community he was really fretting about at this stage was Philippi. He'd heard nothing about anything about the church, his community in Philippi for ages. And then suddenly one day in Rome, somebody, Epaphroditus, arrived from the community in Philippi. And in his joy, Paul wrote his last letter, and that was to the community of Philippi. He was tried on charges that had been dreamt up by the Jewish authorities. And that for us is important, because up to this, Christianity had been regarded as just part of Judaism by the Romans. With the trial of Paul, they could never again be put together. Paul had been dragged before Nero himself for a mockery of a trial, possibly not, we don't know. But as a Roman citizen, he could not be hung or crucified. He was beheaded. The journey began outside the gates of Damascus, ended outside the gates of Rome. And that was Paul, the missionary.